In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Can I talk about pride for a second, Andrew? I have two great points of pride. The first one I would like to mention is the great pride as an American to fulfill orders and send lovely merchandise, Caught Offside t-shirts available on caughtoffsidepod.com. If you haven't got yours already, go and get it. What are you waiting for? Come on, Jesus. I got a kid. I got to feed her. But the immense pride in seeing the great swath of America that our t-shirts are now covering. And I need people. I know. Listen, I don't like taking pictures of myself either. Except nudes, which I sent to Andrew and he stores in a folder on his phone. But no, I don't like taking pictures of myself because I think I've got a weird head. But please send me your pictures of you and the t-shirts. Send them en masse at CO Soccer Pod. CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com. CaughtOffsidePod on Instagram. Belinda Dawes from the Gold Coast in Australia.
Oh. Whoa.
Has sent us a picture with Caught Offside merchant. It's amazing. We can get that far, but yet we need more Americans to chime in. But just listen, we had Charlotte, North Carolina, you know. I'm not saying it's a million miles away, but great. Salem, Oregon.
Mm.
Henderson, Nevada.
Yeah, that's a place.
Islip, New York. Okay, that's not exotic.
No.
Pflugerville, Texas.
Huh.
Tabernacle, New Jersey. Just like, it's just Arnold, Missouri.
That's, I love all these. Are some really deeply American places.
Owings Mills, Maryland.
Yep.
Atlanta, Georgia. Tampa, Florida. Kansas City. Montgomery, Texas. Just amazing. It's very, very cool. So thanks to everyone. Check your updates from USPS. And my second point of pride before we begin this Champions League podcast, my second point of pride is you, Andrew Gundling.
Oh.
I gave you a film recommendation starring Cillian Murphy, or as it's pronounced in America, Cillian Murphy. And you went after it. You said you hadn't heard him in his native accent. Well, this is pretty much all he does in this one. The Civil War drama, The Wind That Shakes the Barley by Ken Loach. And you're going to review it later.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I did. I immediately jumped to it. Like, sometimes people will give me a recommendation and I'm kind of like, yeah, okay. But like, I don't really. But when you told me, first of all, he's in it. And yeah. I just love that guy. And everyone's certainly having a moment with him right now, with him just having one Best Actor. So right there, you have me. But the subject matter.
Yes.
Yeah, I just find it. I don't know a whole lot about Ireland's fight for independence, and you know, I just find it all interesting. When I was in Ireland, we did the tours of those things and saw a lot of those sites, and it kind of ignited something in me. And so when you told me that there's this movie that kind of goes deeper and it's with him, I was like, yeah, I'm in. And I had to search for it. It was not easy to find. For anybody else out there who wants to watch it, I had to download the app called Plex.
Oh.
Plex. I had never heard of it. But
it sounds
just,
like a cure for gingivitis.
Well, I went on Google. I just typed in the name of the movie streaming and hoping that it would tell me where I could find it for free. Because you know me, I'm not paying for anything. And so, and Plex had it. So I had to download that, and there it was.
And 75 ads later, you got to watch it.
Yeah, you're not kidding. That was going to be one of my critiques. It's not a fair critique of the movie, but they had a lot of commercials. But look, you want to watch stuff for free? You got to live with commercials. I've come to terms with that.
You can probably get it on YouTube for $3, but that's $3 that Mr. Gundling's not parting with.
No, I'll watch commercials. I'm not paying $3. I watched it, and then at the end of the pod, for those who are interested, I'll give my review of it. So,
awesome. There you go. Palme d'Or winning film. Not that that matters, but
what'd you say?
It won a Palme d'Or at Cannes.
I don't know what that is.
It's a Cannes Film Festival.
Well, I know what the Cannes Film Festival is. I don't know what the Palme d'Or is, or whatever you just said.
I guess it's the highest award for film.
Oh, really? Okay.
But a lot of the films that are at Cannes aren't always, you know, the big blockbusters. You're not going to see. I'm trying to think.
Like Armageddon,
Tyler Perry's Whatever Your Mother Did Last Winter.
Yeah,
you're not going to see that there.
Yeah, well, so I found it on Plex and I watched it, and I'll review it at the end of the pod for anybody who has seen it and is curious what I thought of it, or anybody who now wants to watch it and then,
yeah,
kind of listen to my review as it's fresh in your mind.
Irish Civil War and the Irish War of Independence,
yeah. Together. What a pod this is going to be. The U.S. Men's National Team Nations League squad has been announced. There are certainly things within that squad that are worth discussing, so we will do that a little bit later on.
Greg is the expert at saying nothing.
Yeah.
He appeared on the Champions League broadcast, and, you know, I mean, there were softball questions, I would say, but I mean, which they're always going to be.
Well, I don't know that it was a... I mean, I don't want to step on what we're going to talk about, but it wasn't like a super controversial roster, I don't think.
No, but he said he agonized over it more than any other roster that probably he's done, which is absolute codswallop.
There's
a World Cup roster, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, but most, well, I don't know. We'll get to it later in the show because I can already see that there are some interesting points that may come up when we get to that. So we'll get to that. Just a couple quick CONCACAF Champions Cup notes, because the Philadelphia Union were just, I mean, it was maybe their most embarrassing defeat that I've seen in, I don't know, certainly in the Jim Curtin era. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
In the Beaker era.
He does resemble that guy. But JJ, we obviously have to start with the UEFA Champions League, as we have been begging this competition to deliver us some drama over the past couple seasons.
And it didn't really.
What?
It didn't.
What is your bar for drama?
It you know what it did? It reignited the days of the slow trudge towards penalties. That's what it did. There was two. I really enjoyed it, Letty. Inter. I thought that was really good.
We'll start with that.
Okay. You're so mad with me.
Because I just want to know you've seen too much. I think that's the problem. You've seen, you know, like what I always said about Al Michaels as he got further into his broadcasting career. He had seen too much, and so there was nothing he could see anymore that would excite him.
Someone told me that Al Michaels ate his dinner on air during Sunday Night Football, but you just never noticed.
This is where you're at now. You've seen too much.
Cutting up a pork chop, eats it, little glass of wine, second and third.
Yeah, you've seen too many Istanbuls and Argentina versus France's and remontadas, and you nothing excites you anymore, because drama was delivered. Now, it didn't apparently reach your lofty standards, but let's talk about Atletico Madrid, Inter Milan.
The lofty standard is what we saw almost for about five seasons running, where we're like, we cannot believe this stuff that we're watching. And if you think anything in the last few days has come close to that, then you're just lying to yourself.
It can still be dramatic without it having been Real Madrid's march to a Champions League final from 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I think Atletico Madrid, Inter Milan fits the bill. Especially,
really enjoyed this one, though.
Especially when Inter goes up in the 33rd minute on DeMarco's goal. And
great goal.
Yeah, really nice move. Well worked. Good pass from Barella to DeMarco. Finishes it perfectly. And, you know, there was still a lot of game to play, but I forget who the announcer was, but they made some kind of comment to the effect of, like, could that be what seals it? And then you almost blinked your eyes, and it's Antoine
Griezmann.
It was
Jonathan Pierce, wasn't it?
Was it Jonathan Pierce on the call, that one?
I think it was. And
yeah,
look,
yeah, because it was Andres Cordero on the call of the Dortmund PSV.
You're talking about someone who's seen a lot. He's seen everything from Cantona's kung fu kick right the way up. So I think what he was referring to was that Inter would go into some kind of classic Italian defensive mode. And they'd see it out. They didn't even see it out to halftime.
They didn't see it out 2 minutes after their goal.
No.
As Antoine Griezmann's quest to be the most underrated player of a generation continues, as he scores a goal that you weren't immediately sure it was a goal. He looked offside, but he wasn't. It was all kosher. JJ Statman Dave posting this about Griezmann. Griezmann's game by numbers versus Inter: 100% on dribbles completed, 100% on tackles won, three chances created, one big chance, and of course, one goal as well. He's just an incredible player.
He's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. To jump ahead, like, okay, so I do think that Inter should have cut out that pass. I can't remember who the defender was who went flailing at it.
On Griezmann's goal?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to cut that out. He just swipes at it. It's like, what are you doing? Strike through the back of the ball.
Even before it got to him, though, the build-up, like on the edge of the box, it felt like they had an opportunity to clear that they failed at. And those things, I mean, you're in the knockout stage of the Champions League. Those things bite you.
Yeah, but it's a great finish from Griezmann. But to skip forward then to right to the end of the game.
Oh, wow. We're making moves now.
But yeah, but you have to. Riquelme's chance, the pass that Griezmann's coming in from the right hand side, the pass he makes with the outside of his left boot, and you're like, where's that going? Oh, it's going, the vision to pick out Riquelme. All Riquelme's got to do is just get his head over the ball and keep it low, and that's it. They're through. There's no need for worrying about penalties or anything like that. The finish was so ridiculously bad. It's such a horrible finish to what was a beautiful pass, one of my favorite passes, such a prescient pass. Now before, like, Memphis Depay had it, I wouldn't say, well, it was game changing.
I mean, can we talk about him for a sec here? It's one of the most impactful late game substitutions I've ever seen. He stepped on the field and then immediately had a chance right in front of goal that kind of it got tackled from him, like, in the 6 yard box.
We should give Darmian credit for that. That was a brilliant tackle.
So that happened, and then, like, a couple minutes after that, he smashes one off the inside of the post, and then a couple minutes after that, he sends the place into euphoria with his goal to tie it, and then even after that, he still had another chance.
In extra time,
he had a chance. And by the way, he then, like, skipping ahead to penalties, he then took one of the best penalties I've ever seen, I think.
Leathered it.
Yeah, I mean, his substitution appearance was, I don't know how much more impactful a substitute can be than what he gave them after coming on in, like, the 80th minute or whatever it was. I mean, he saved the game for them. And, you know, it's tough for Inter because first off, they squandered a two-goal lead on aggregate, which is brutal. But even with that, they did have their chances near the end of this one in regulation to have...
Barella had a chance.
And Marcus Thuram had one that he put it high and wide. Yeah, but Barella had... I mean, he had a one-on-one with the keeper. didn't take the cleanest of touches, wound up still getting a shot off, but kind of having to settle for a weak attempt on goal as defenders were sort of getting back and catching up to him. I mean, there were a couple chances there that, like, in the moment you thought, oh, you know, well, they'll probably still see this one out, but that would have been a nice cushion for them, and they didn't see it out. Memphis Depay saved the day.
And it wasn't his worst moment of the night, but Lautaro Martinez had a great chance, like a super headed chance. The more you watch it, that was in the first half of extra time. The more you watch that one, you think, again, not to go down this road again, but, you know, a top class player heads that on frame.
He's kind of a weird player.
Well, we'll get to that. His coup de grace was about to be delivered later on.
Not a whole lot happened in extra time, certainly in the second half of extra time.
I think Thuram getting his, grabbing Savage's junk was pretty.
Yeah.
Actually. If it was a Manscaped advert, you'd say Thuram didn't appear to grab a whole amount of area.
How much do you need to get?
Yeah, probably only the tip. Probably just that.
That is so not okay. I'm sorry.
They were laughing about it later on then.
That's
having
just
jokes,
not okay.
You know what? If both parties are okay with it, you know, as Tony Soprano said, with the consenting adults, that's fine.
I wouldn't be one of them. I wouldn't be one of the consenting adults.
No, I don't think if my wee soldier was grabbed, that I would respond in but they definitely were exchanging jokes at later on. And Savage was in great form when he was talking after the game, when he was interviewed after the game by Alessandro Del Piero.
Well, it's easy to be happy after you've won a game like that.
True enough. The penalties, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Can we do that? Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You often like to put yourself on this podcast as manager. You enjoy the role of cutting people for various and sometimes petty infractions.
Sure.
If you were manager, are you having Alexis Sanchez that early to take a penalty?
No.
What? Why? No. Why?
Yeah.
I mean, he had one sprint where he was closing down Witzel where you thought, That's the Alexis Sanchez of like a decade ago. That's the guy. But I'm not having him take a penalty. I'm just not. And it was a poor penalty.
Yeah. I will say, I mean, look, Jan Oblak is a pretty imposing figure in that goal. He looks huge. He's just one of these keepers that, like, I'd have to see what his measurements are. I don't know if he's like, what is he, like 6'5" or something? I don't know. He just looks big in goal. He's good at that, at penalties. And he was on his game for this one and didn't need to be for the last one. Like you said, Lautaro Martinez, it came down to him, skied it way over the bar. And that was that. And what a scene there in the Metropolitano.
Yeah.
As Atletico advance.
It was kind of a who's who of one-time Premier League players as well, which I think is very instructive as to the way European football is going now. You know, where once the flow was, you might spend time in the Premier League, but your big ambition was to end up somewhere in Italy or in Spain with one of the top sides. Now that flow is definitely going the other way. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize or barely recognize Davy Klaassen. He's got his hair done.
It was weird to see Alexis Sanchez and Davy Klaassen both taking penalties in the round of 16 of the champion. Now, look, Alexis Sanchez does have a pretty storied career. He was a great player.
34, Andrew.
I know, but seeing Davy Klaassen step up.
And Marko Arnautović scoring in the first round. And we were led to believe that, Inter were going to go to a final again, or possibly they were better than last time. They're winning this team, this crew of individuals. And the goal they scored was brilliant. But this crew was leading Serie A by 16 points.
Yeah.
You have to ask questions. You have to.
About Serie A?
Yeah, definitely. And well, not so much. It's some of the guys on the roster. that are being involved. And that's not to say there's not good players. Of course there is. Of course there is. But there's a lot of guys who would not cut it in the Premier League right now who are still...
I mean, look, maybe that's true.
Collecting a wage.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to judge guys like Mkhitaryan. Was he a Premier League failure?
I forgot about him.
Was that just a time where no one could go to Manchester United and thrive? You know, a lot of guys who have gone on to have glowing careers were at United in that era and couldn't find a way to make it work. Di Maria, Memphis, who we mentioned before. I mean, you know, Mkhitaryan is one of many. You know, there's other guys too, JJ. Like, I have my Andrews people. If I had one of those teams for Serie A, Hakan Çalhanoğlu would be on it. He's one of the best passers in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
He took a ridiculous penalty as well. I love that guy. I could watch him play all day. So, you know, there are legit star players on that Inter.
There is, but I'm just saying.
They were in the Champions League final a year ago, and season are waltzing to a title. So it's hard for me to criticize their credentials as being a great team.
You can. They're not.
This is a tough look to go out in the round of 16. They're kind of the one thing that's missing. Well, I mean, we'll talk about the final eight, but it's pretty much a who's who right now of Europe's elite. And I think it will hurt them to not be one of those teams.
Yeah. And I'm not, like, I shouldn't really have a go, but I am, really, because just some of the players, you know, you do see your Alexis Sanchez's, your Darmian's, your Davy Klaassen's.
But I don't think Alexis Sanchez is still an impactful player on that team. I know he came on, but...
Andrew, he's coming on in a Champions League round of 16 game, and he's taking the first penalty in it. How much more impactful do you want him to be?
Well, starting. He could start and play a lot for them.
No,
I'm not. He's a sub.
He wouldn't be coming on.
A lot of Premier League teams have guys who are not all that different than... Look, I agree with you that the Premier League is better than Serie A. I'm not trying to argue about that. But I'm also saying that I do think Inter are really good.
It's just dramatic, some of the names you see pop up. And you think, okay, right. There is a definite and quite defined gulf in standards between these teams and Europe's elite. And Inter would count themselves as three times champions and part of that elite, but they're nowhere near it, as I said in the text message to you tonight.
Nico Cantor posting, only one team had mounted a comeback in regulation versus Inter all season. Then came Atletico Madrid. No team had scored versus Inter in the last 15 minutes of regulation all season. Then came Atletico Madrid. Bested in the first leg, but tenacious in the second. Cholo Simeone does it again. Atletico are relentless. They have proven in the Simeone era to be an extremely tough out in this competition. In a parallel universe, they've hoisted two of these things, but Real Madrid have worked their magic in the final moments a couple times against them and have undermined Atletico's efforts. But we know what this team is capable of under this manager, the way they play. They're tough to break down, and they've got some lethal attackers of their own right when they need goals, like Griezmann. They will not be an easy out for whoever they have next. So onward and upward for Atletico Madrid. We move on. We'll stay with today's games. We're recording this Wednesday night shortly after these games finished up. So we'll stay on Wednesday, JJ. We'll go to Germany, where Borussia Dortmund oust PSV Eindhoven. Team America gone. Very sad to see. It's 3-1 on aggregate. Dortmund are the winners.
Curious kind of game, because from the early offing, right up until the goal, you thought Dortmund are going to blow these lot away. That there's, again, a gulf.
Yeah, I give PSV some credit. Because you're right, Dortmund, I mean, it was immediate. The pressure was immediate. It was in the first minute. The dam burst early, thanks to Jadon Sancho.
Can we talk about that goal for 1 second?
It was like a seeing eye single in baseball.
It went through the PSV defender's legs. Like, it's a nice little touch. He's tucked inside, gets it out of his feet. The strike's not amazing, but it's right by the post and crucially through the defender's legs. And the keeper obviously sees it that fraction of a second late and it goes in. But Gary Neville was talking ages ago on one of his many podcast vehicles about how Peter Schmeichel used to instruct defenders to not so much not block, but don't get a deflection on this. Don't, like, let, you're better off let the shot come through and I can see it rather than have it come through the legs or it get deflected or something like that. It's almost like give the guy the shot from that kind of distance, which sounds, now Schmeichel was incredibly arrogant, so I can imagine him delivering this missive and not actually meaning it.
I would think a manager would hear Schmeichel say that and then walk over to the defender afterward and say, okay, everything he just said to you, don't listen to it. If you can block a shot, you block the shot.
You blocked. I would agree with that. But it was, but he had, there's the kernel of a point in there that if it is going through, like the, definitely the defining factor in that is, it, okay, it's on target and it's got just enough pace to beat the keeper, but it's more that, it's more so than anything that it comes through the legs and the keeper sees it late. So I'm wondering if there's any innovations that are about to come through where we see a new style of defending where if someone's winding up, let him have it. Let him hit it. I would doubt it.
Wouldn't happen on my team.
No, but from
you
that distance,
an effort.
From that distance,
but,
you
but
make
I thought,
an argument.
I thought that they made it a little too easy for Sancho to get the shot off in the first place. He kind of came to him like 20 yards out or so.
And he only had to shift it onto his right foot.
No one closed him out. It looked like there were kind of three defenders around him. And no one really stepped up to apply pressure, so he was able to get it off. And it was this kind of slow roller that you're sort of just waiting either for the keeper to get a hand on it or it to go just on the outside of the post. But
ground ball to second.
Yeah, found its way through. Boy, what a – Jadon Sancho, like, what a whirlwind year. You know, you're in exile at Manchester United, and now you're scoring goals to put your team through, essentially, in the knockout stage of the Champions League. It's like he won the lottery.
It's crazy. And it kind of goes to show you that there's, you know, there's some places, maybe that's his home now. I mean, it's not like he's completely, you know, torn up the Bundesliga on his return, but he's beginning to click into a bit of form. I mean, he has a goal and two assists in the Bundesliga since he's returned, and he's now got his goal in the Champions League. So maybe he's just finding himself again.
But credit to PSV. Like you said, it looked like they were about to get barnstormed on out
Didn't
of there.
Happen.
And they held their nerve. I mean, Dortmund did have some chances, certainly, after that. But then the game settled in, and PSV had just as many. And it felt like the kind of game where it was like, okay, this is going to be tense. Like, whatever that initial tidal wave was from Borussia Dortmund, they weathered that storm, and now we're going to buckle up for a tight one here. And you knew at some point a chance would fall to them, and it was just going to be a matter of whether or not they could take it. Well, it did in the fourth minute of stoppage time with PSV desperately needing a goal, and all of a sudden, the guy that you would want it to fall to, Luke de Jong, the ball is now suddenly at his feet, and it's just him and the keeper. And he misses his chance, puts it over the bar. It was a crushing moment for PSV because it kind of felt like that was it. And then sure enough, a minute later, PSV make a mistake coming out of the back. Ball comes to, was it Marco Reus who dribbles in and calmly finishes with one of the last kicks of the ball. And that was it. Borussia Dortmund had sealed the deal and they advanced. But boy, that's my prediction is that Luke de Jong doesn't get a whole lot of sleep tonight. That's a miss that he will not soon forget.
No, it was horrifying. And yeah, you know, PSV carved out chances, but some of them, I think it was the Teze volley, 89 minutes. It's still not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Bakayoko had some chances on the right.
Lozano hit the outside of the post.
What a rocket that was.
Yeah. But that was the kind of chance that they had. And then, of course, there was the mistake. And then Reus runs in and as calm as you like slides it home. You're right, though. Luke de Jong's not going to be able to sleep. I wouldn't know it from this game, from what I saw, because I was flicking between the two. I tried the multicast, by the way.
Okay.
Didn't love it. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it is very hard to assess flow when you're watching, when you have two games on one screen like that. It's tough to know exactly the flow of each game. But I experimented with that, and then I started flicking between the two. I would say about Dest, that Dest had a, you know, he didn't, like, nobody had an unbelievable game for PSV. But in fairness to Dest, the job he had to do in terms of getting forward and also tracking Daniel Malin, who was the biggest danger for Dortmund, was pretty good. So, like, in terms of the double jobbing that fullbacks have to do right now, I thought he did well.
Yeah. But sadly, not well enough.
No.
As Borussia Dortmund are also through to the quarterfinals of the competition. JJ, let's go to Tuesday now. Oh my, Arsenal. They get it done the hard way.
This is the drama you were talking about.
Well, I mean, yeah, along with Atletico Madrid and Inter. And Luke de Jong in the fourth minute of stoppage time alone on goal. Were the I mean, come on, man. No drama.
I didn't say, no. I'm just saying there was, it seems as if the drama XG, the XD, used to be very, very high for these games. Now it's shrunk a bit.
I think your bar has raised to a level that is not fair. Arsenal, I mean,
talk about my bar.
If you want drama, you got it on Tuesday afternoon in North London. Arsenal goes to penalties and they advance. The feeling was, you know, the first leg of this tie, they were awful. It was really their only bad game over the last 2.5 to 3 months or so. But the feeling out of that was still, well, they only lost by one and they're going home now. And away goals don't matter, so they're fine. And in the end, they were, but I'd say we took a bit of the scenic route to get there.
Definitely.
According to XG philosophy, JJ, neither team had an XG above one. Arsenal got close. I think they were 0.99. Porto were just 0.47. I mean, extra time was basically like watching a couple Carabao Cup Chelseas.
This was the extra time was I mean, that was a classic European game. And we do have to give some credit to Porto. Like, Porto were wily, wily characters for Arsenal to face across these two legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't just open the door and say, yeah, we're gonna let you fly through, we're gonna let you do what you want. They made life tough for Arsenal, and they need to be given credit, because from the first leg, the perception was, well, Arsenal played a weird system where they kind of pulled off and they didn't really go for it. Well, they were at home, and they and Porto were able to stifle them in London too.
That's true. It is true. And then another guy that I think deserves credit, who only just recently was mentioned on this podcast for, I guess, not having impressed you enough. David Raya called into action, made a big save in the first half of this match, but then in penalties, I mean, he was up for it.
He was, and it's a shame for Aaron Ramsdale. Like, Ramsdale had to play at the weekend against Brentford because Ray obviously is technically on loan and so couldn't play against his parent club. But Ramsdale has that mistake in the mind of Arsenal fans now, and Ray has got this great moment of getting them through to the Champions League quarterfinal stage,
yeah.
Fresh in the mind.
You know, his save on Wendell, like, I do feel like usually I'm always quick to praise goalkeepers when they make saves in penalty shootouts, because I just think it's inherently a very difficult thing to do. But yeah. I do acknowledge that most of the time when a goalkeeper makes a save in penalties, yeah, they did something right. But a lot of times they get help from a guy who took a not so good penalty. Wendell's penalty, I don't think there was anything wrong with it. I really thought it was just a tremendous save. He's full extension. Barely gets, what did he get, like a fingertip on it, just enough to knock it onto
the post. Yeah.
I mean, if you're Wendell, it's like, I mean, that ball, I think he probably thought it was going into side netting. No one's going to get to that. Yeah. That's a hell of a save from Raya to extend to get to that. I was impressed.
No, I think you're right. I just can't hear his name. I started humming it yesterday. Mr. Wendell, yeah. Boy, Mr. Wendell. Remember that song by Arrested Development?
No.
What?
All right, relax.
You don't remember Mr. Wendell?
No.
Oh my God, it's
stop acting like this is a Don McLean American Pie.
Mr. Wendell by Arrested Development is such an earworm. It just sticks with you. It's crazy.
The only thing that's been stuck in my head over the last week is Dances, Romances. From Donna or whatever her name was.
Donna, yes. It's so creepy. By the way, thanks to everyone for the reaction to that absolutely deranged and hastily made segment. But yeah, I'm sorry for the people that were creeped out. There were so many people creeped out by that. And creeped out by the way that you made only nice things out of AI.
Yeah, it was an AI generated
intro. I It's probably the most disturbing thing we've ever done.
Remember romances.
Remember there was this moral panic in America about, was it a Judas Priest record? And if you played it backward, there was these campaigners who were saying it says, do it, do it, do it. And they were afraid it was contributing to teen suicide in like the 80s.
Oh my God, no, I'm not aware.
You're not aware. That feels like what happened with Dan. If you play it backwards, it's probably some kind of satanic instruction.
Back to this one. Let's talk about Arsenal's goal. What a huge moment. I could already sense a little bit from some of the Arsenal people that I follow on Twitter that, like, because of how difficult Porto were to break down in the first leg, because of, you know, Arsenal, while they did manage to get through against Brentford over the weekend, it was not the easy 5-0, 6-0 that we were seeing from them recently. Like, suddenly goal scoring, you know, it was maybe creeping into your head if you're an Arsenal fan a little bit that, like, okay, we're not just, like, the floodgates are not open right now the way that they were 2 weeks ago. So the further you kind of progressed into this match, you start thinking about that. You start thinking about how it's been 14 years since Arsenal have managed to get out of this stage of the competition. But then, I mean, when you need someone to step up, who better to turn to than your captain, Martin Odegaard? I know he didn't score the goal. It was a great finish from Trossard from a somewhat tight angle, but Odegaard makes that happen. He freezes one guy and then basically takes two other guys out with the pass that he slides through into Trossard's path. It's, you know, you need captains to step up in big moments. And man, that was enormous from him. What a huge moment in his career with this club.
Josh Butler had a tweet about Odegaard. Rio Ferdinand, commentating for, I guess, BT or whoever it is.
TNT? Do they have TNT?
It's correct, TNT. Rio Ferdinand on Odegaard's assist. You can't give a locksmith like that the keys. And he goes, what? The whole point of a locksmith is they don't require the effing keys. Now, in true X fashion, James, he gets involved. It's making me feel dumb, but surely that makes sense. Giving a locksmith a key is making his life even easier than it normally is. I feel like I'm missing something. Josh Butler. The way I see it, anyone can open a door with keys, so giving them to the locksmith, the person whose skill lies in unlocking the door without the keys, just undermines the ability of the locksmith.
This is all making my hair hurt. Like, I don't know what is right or wrong.
I don't know either. All I know is that, like, Martin Odegaard's career, like this... a wunderkind who was like signed by Real Madrid when he was like, what, 13 or 14. Mm. And then kind of, he had this like struggle period where in the years where he, like everyone thought he was going to explode and he was going to be again like this, like almost a Michael Owen or a Wayne Rooney from 17 onwards, he was just going to blaze this trail. And then he had just like loan moves to Heerenveen, Vitesse, and then, obviously, Real Sociedad was the thing that kind of sprung him forward. And then the Arsenal loan. And now he's just like, you can't imagine this team. The team is, I won't say it's been built around him. I think that might be too grandiose a thing to say. But he's captain. Mm-hmm. You know, again, we were always talking about careers and career paths and how it's not linear. Like, there was, his pathway was mapped out for him by so many people. And there was so much hype. I remember when Madrid signed him, it was, you know, there was big hype about him. It just, like, careers take a weird turn. And now he's 25 and he's at the peak of his powers. And Arsenal are a significantly lessened side without him in it.
Definitely. I mean, he's a lot of that creative element in that midfield. You know, Arsenal are another one of these clubs where is it tricky to ask who's Arsenal's best player? And maybe that's a good thing. Like, cause I feel like there's probably four different answers. You could say Saliba, you could say Odegaard. I would probably say Bukayo Saka.
You could say Declan Rice.
You could say Declan Rice. Like, that's, I think that's a good thing when you can potentially have a lot of legitimate answers to that question.
I'm going to say Odegaard.
Okay.
I'm going to say Odegaard.
I'm going to say Saka, but I wouldn't fight anybody who said any of those other names that we mentioned there. Mm. Back to Odegaard for a sec, kind of going on a tangent. Are Norway in a bit of a moment here? They can't, can't squander Holland.
Sure, they've already squandered two qualifying campaigns.
Like, Holland, you've got Holland and Odegaard in their peak. Oscar Bob looks like he's going to be a player. You know, even like, you've got some other like decent Premier League. Christopher Eyer, yeah. Sander Berge. Let's wait and see what transpires with Norway in the next 5 years or so. Let's hope that this doesn't get squandered here.
Well, they've been crap. And they've been crap in the worst way in qualifying, in that they've been in groups where you thought, yeah, they're one of the serious contenders, and they've never got it going. I remember, was it qualifying for the World Cup? Turkey showed up to Oslo and just gave them a clipping. I think the thing about them is, Andrew, that their ability to kind of step on the rake. I mean, do you remember Norwegian Football Associations, the clubs came together and were kind of voting and debating on whether, if Norway qualified, that they'd go to Qatar at all. Mm. And instead of those conversations being kind of secret, they were suddenly everywhere. And then turned out, you don't need to worry about this, guys. It's going to be fine. Yeah. They have the pieces, but they have not strung, not even close to stringing it together yet.
Yeah.
Scotland have gone to Oslo and won in the past. No, I'm not saying Scotland are rubbish, but
no, they're in a good moment right now too.
You got your Hollands, your Odegaards. You know, they should be probably better.
So Arsenal into the quarterfinals, like I said, for the first time in 14 years.
It's a pleasure to have them back, Andrew. A pleasure. I want Arsenal fans to know, I'm delighted that they're back in the quarterfinals.
Well, I'll say this: I do feel you can check me if you think I'm overstating this competition in some way. I know you're a league man first. And Europe second. But I do think that this Arsenal advancing to this stage, it does add some credibility to what we've seen from them in the league over the last few seasons. The fact that they're in the quarterfinals with all these other great teams, the Champions League, it still does have this power to kind of be kingmaker and sort of anoint certain teams as being the teams of the moment. You know, sometimes you even see it with certain clubs when they're struggling in the league, like Real Madrid for a bunch of years when Barcelona were always winning leagues. Real Madrid were winning Champions Leagues, and so you had a legitimate debate. You know, so for Arsenal to kind of break through that barrier that they haven't been able to break through for the last decade and a half, I think it kind of does add to the aura of the moment for them that, okay, this has not been fool's gold in the league. This team is they're where they should be.
Yeah, so there's a sense that that some rights have been wrong, some wrongs have been righted, and that they are heading back to where, because the banter club era of Arsenal is so recent, where things were just falling apart for them, and even European football was no longer a guarantee. Remember, Wenger guaranteed them European football every year until he didn't, and then the last few years were bad, and so it's significant. It definitely is, and they feel as if the club has been run in the correct fashion.
Yeah. And then finally, we'll close out the slate of Champions League fixtures with Barcelona, as their dream of sending Xavi out a winner continues.
And wouldn't that be something?
It's still alive. They wouldn't be my pick, but the dream is alive. And this felt like, I mean, look, we'll see how they kick on from here and how some of these kids play for them. But this felt really important for Barcelona and their youth movement. I mean, if you looked out on that field in terms of who were making the impacts for them, 16-year-old Lamine Yamal looked like he might have been the best player on the field for both teams. 20-year-old Fermin Lopez scores the opener. And 17-year-old Pau Cabarsí starts at center back and takes home man of the match honors, the youngest defender to ever represent Barcelona in a Champions League. And by the way, maybe the two best of their young players, Gavi and Pedri, didn't even play, as they're still working their way back from injuries. There is a lot of talent coming through right now. And I mean, we can get into the specifics of the game, but I can't help but my mind just goes to, how are they going to handle this? Because they're so, like, their financial woes are so prominent and in everyone's face. Everyone's aware of it. There was a report from Marca that I saw the other day that PSG may be willing to pay $218 million just for Yamal.
Yeah.
And so I mentioned this on Twitter, and I got a wide range of responses from people. At the Farm Dude said, Barca can't afford a pot to piss in. PSG offers that kind of get out of jail money, he's good as gone. Yep. Bancho Geneza said, if they'll get rid of Yamal. He said they will. Based on circumstances, they will. It's too early to judge. He's so young. He might be one of those players who could define the decade or be another Ansu Fati. It's a gamble either way. Lane said there's no way they do that. PSG should try and tempt them, but Barca can't sell him. It's easy for me to say this, but you're Barcelona. You can't be a selling club. You have this talent in Yamal. They've got to keep these guys together. Find another way to raise money. I know that's naive, but
further leverage yourself into Wall Street. Take that Yank money. Take that Wall Street money.
And take for you to say that.
What do you mean?
Well, that's not usually the route. Like, you're usually the one kind of mocking and scoffing the clubs that
no,
do that.
I'm saying that's the only way, the only other way, and I don't think they'll do that because what's left? These players will have to move on, and they'll have to gamble that there's more following. And by the way, it is a good point about the Ansu Fati. Like, not all of them are going to make the cut,
right?
But if you can cash in.
So you would sell Yamal if that's the price tag.
I wouldn't want to, but they don't have a choice. Like, we're not, like, what world are people living in? Your first responder, your first tweeter there was correct.
Yeah,
he's that money. They literally can't turn it down. That is the mess they've got themselves into, and it's terrible because that was to talk about the performance. You know, at times. Like last year at times and over the past few years, Napoli have been so, you know, energetic and exciting to watch. But like, there was one-way traffic. Well, not one-way traffic. Napoli did create plenty of chances themselves. But it was really enjoyable to watch what Barcelona did. Like the Lewandowski goal was lovely.
God, that was like the ultimate like Pep era Barcelona goal. A ball just like walked into the net.
The second goal then, Rafinha cracking it off, the lovely little turn inside, cracking it off the butt of the post, and then Cancelo that Cancelo finish, how many times have you seen people balloon that?
He just whizzed it in.
Whizzed it in home. Yeah. And obviously then the first goal was, the first goal by Fermín López was a beautiful goal. So,
they've got all these guys 20 and under who look like star in the making, La Masia quality stud players for the next 10 years.
Maybe there's a way to do this, but like Barcelona are in the phase, you know, there's a line in Peep Show where it's one of my favorite comedies. Anyone can watch it. I think it's up in Hulu. Or used to be. And there's a line in Peep Show where Mark, the two main characters, they're two roommates. Mark is out of work. He has no money. And Jeremy is talking to him. He goes, Mark, what are you doing? He goes, I'm thinking of getting rid of my mobile phone. I'm thinking of getting rid of my cell phone. He goes, why? Jeremy, this is the end times. I'm going to be drinking my piss soon. And the point being is that like that's where Barcelona are.
Is it they that are. Bad?
They, how do you know they're in the drinking their own piss phase of the club? They're talking about making their own jerseys. They're talking about breaking with.
What's wrong with that?
Ugh, no.
Like they won't find high quality people to come in and do that for them. It's Barcelona.
It's like if you were going out, if you're 16 years of age and everyone's going out wearing designer brands and you go out wearing a jumper your mother's knitted for you.
I think I saw the stats on it that they make more money than any other club in the world, or Nike makes whatever it is. The jersey sales of Barcelona create more revenue than any other club in the world. They sell more than any other club in the world. So if Barcelona sees that as a revenue stream, why would that be something we would make fun of? Why is that? Why do we not view that as a good idea?
Because you're forgetting the one thing about football jerseys that makes them kind of. We all remember that. I can take you through all the eras of Liverpool: Reebok era, Nike era, Adidas era, New Balance era, the terrible Warrior era. I'd love to see Liverpool's sales of Warrior, a hockey brand. It matters what you wear, Andrew.
I think
it
people
matters
care
in
more.
Football. It, they
I
don't
think the
care.
Sponsor on the jersey matters more than the Nike swoosh.
This is a great
Adidas label.
Absolute bollocks. I don't think that's true at all. I don't think that's true at all.
I'm not going to rip them for this. People will make fun of them because it's a sign that they're poor and in need of money, but I don't think it's a bad idea.
I can guarantee you that people will be stocking up on the old Nike jerseys, and they'll go on dodgy Chinese websites, or they'll buy them from very reputable reputable websites like Classic Football Shirts. This isn't a good move. There's cachet with those jerseys. We all remember Borussia Dortmund 1997, the Nike jersey. That was so cool. That was class. Remember the Kappa Italy jerseys from Euro 2000? Oh, they were so amazing.
I don't know. I find myself, I'm more likely to say, remember Tottenham's Holsten jersey or their Manchester jersey.
So I buy you, right? Let's test the theory then. So I buy you a Holsten from 91. That's a knockoff. That doesn't have the branding on it. So Holsten, it was, Umbro. So it doesn't have the Umbro stuff on it. And you'd value that. You think that's great. Oh my God, no.
Oh, I don't need the insignia of the company I don't care about that.
Well, I love Umbro stuff. If someone got me like a Liverpool era Umbro jersey without the Umbro on it, wouldn't mean the same. I think you're underestimating brand power here. And I'm surprised by you. As a fellow American, I'm surprised by you.
I'm surprised by you. You're usually Mr. Grassroots, but here you are saying a jersey is worthless without a Nike swoosh on it.
No, they won't be as cool. Oh, maybe they'll get an unbelievable designer and they'll be absolutely fire.
I mean, it's Barcelona. They can probably hire whoever they want to make these jerseys.
No, they can't.
All right. Anyway.
It's a good conversation, though. I want to hear what the animals think. Like, how much does it matter?
That they're producing their own jerseys as opposed to Nike producing them. Yes, that's the conversation.
Well, that's the conversation.
And the money if the money that they rake in through that, again, I got to find the tweet that listed how much money is made off Barcelona kits. If that money allows them to keep Lamine Yamal, we're going to sit here and argue over whether or not it was worth it.
Here's another thing for you. And even being a bad kit manufacturing brand is like Castore. Castore are just seen as, no, kind of Johnny come latelys, haven't really created many nice jerseys. You ask a Newcastle fan, who would they prefer to have designing their kits? Castore, Newcastle, the club itself, or go back to the old Adidas kits? There's only one where they're going, my friend.
In this
Don't
game.
Don't understand branding.
Back to this game. One of the things with this, I mean, look, Barcelona played pretty well, deserving winners, but there is, as is always the case, there is an element of fine margins here because Jesper Lindstrom found himself alone about 7 yards out and missed a free header that could have tied this one late. And then just a minute or so after that is when Sergio Roberto linked up with Lewandowski to walk it into the net. And that was that. So
and they hit the frame of the goal as well, albeit it was at 3-1, but...
Yeah, I mean, that was after the Lewandowski goal happened. Yeah, it might have made for a nervy stoppage time, but Barcelona did have a cushion at that point. Lindstrom was the chance. That was the chance. That was the Luke de Jong moment of this game. And so, you know, we've talked about Barcelona, but for Napoli, I don't know, does this feel kind of like an end to what was sort of a magical year and a half? Like their title last year was the notable title of last season, and then... Yeah, this year they had fallen off, certainly.
Yes.
But as long as they kind of kept the Champions League run alive, there was you could still talk about conjuring up some of the magic of the year before. Now they're out. Who knows what they're going to look like next year? Osimhen, Kvicha, Kvaratskhelia.
Yeah.
What their futures are. I don't know. Felt a little bit like maybe the end of a chapter there.
Certainly is. A costly end as well. Did you see Aurelio De Laurentiis, the owner of Napoli, talking to Guillaume Balague before the game, saying how important it is that Napoli progress, how important it is that they go forward, and that he'd offered 10 million plus to every single player if they won through.
Oh, boy.
10 million plus. Well, so Guillaume said...
To every player?
Yeah, it was something in that region. Let me just check it quickly, because it's hardly 10 million between all of them. I mean, but yeah, he was on the sideline right before the game, and he was very much up for the game. Maybe that was 10 million each was going to be. Maybe I overshot that a bit. De Laurentiis, meanwhile, wanted to give his side some extra incentive before kickoff. In an interview with journalist Guillaume Balaguer for CBS, 74-year-old promised his Napoli players more than 10 million in bonuses if they progressed to the quarterfinal stage. Offered his players 10. Napoli stars have missed out on an eight-figure reward after Barcelona knocked them out of the Champions League. This is from TalkSport. Club president De Laurentiis has promised his players each.
Oh, wow.
10 million each. I was right.
How wealthy is he?
Wait, I know he's in film and film production and stuff like that. I'll check his net worth. Do you talk there?
That is only adding insult to injury, I guess. Where does the line get drawn for that? Is it only guys who played in the game?
That's another one.
Everyone on the bench get one?
Are you giving a 25-man squad or 22-man or whatever it is?
What about the coaching staff? Does the set-piece man, these are all questions that I guess we'll never have the answer to. But for Napoli, like I said, the future is not entirely clear. And who knows? It might be the end of what was a really, really fun ride for them over the last couple seasons. And so now, JJ, we know the final eight.
Aurelio De Laurentiis, who has previously had his net worth estimated to be more than 1 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Still, that's not nothing money, though. Yeah, for a billionaire... To give 10 million each to let's say like 15 guys,
150 million.
I mean that's something, right?
I guess the money, does that offset the money that they could potentially make?
That's no, not even close, right? Like the bonus
the
for
next round.
But isn't like advancing to the next round like 10.5 million euros or something? I don't know. We are guessing on a lot of things right now. This has been
it's each
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so we're into the final eight now. I think the draw is on Friday. There are only interesting matchups here. Now, I will say it's going to be tough for this to work out this way, but I am very anti teams from the same league playing each other in the Champions League. I'd rather not see those matchups. However, so you got three Spanish teams, two English teams, two German teams, one French team. Like, there's a good chance, I would say, maybe Spanish teams could get matched up. I'd rather see that now than have that happen in the semifinals or the final. Maybe I'd want to get that out of the way now. And yeah. I would also like to see Manchester City and Real Madrid. I think I'd like to see them on separate sides of the draw.
I don't mind. I'm open, Andrew.
Okay. And then one other thing that I wanted to mention about all this, the coefficient. So I will admit the Arsenal game was a little conflicting because look, this will not be breaking news to anyone. I generally don't root for them to win, but their win does improve England's coefficient, especially with Napoli going out, Inter going out, Italy took a hit. So this increases the chances of a fifth English team qualifying for the Champions League. I saw some Spurs fans basically saying that, their hate for Arsenal is so strong that like they were still mad and they were justifying it kind of by saying, oh, so fifth gets in. Like there's no joy in finishing fifth. I don't care if there is a Champions League spot for that. Who wants to finish fifth anyway? That's not what we're playing for. That it almost feels dirty to get in that way. And to that, I just wanted to say that this is a fan base that sometimes, to steal a phrase, JJ, from ESPN New York's Don LaGreca, this is a fan base, when I see things like this, that seems like it wants to be in love with its own sadness. Because I have seen Tottenham not qualify for the Champions League because of mass food poisoning. I have seen them literally qualify for the Champions League, finish fourth, but not get in because sixth place Chelsea won the competition and took the spot away from them. Like, Tottenham fans, you have dealt with some rough hands over the years. So if a little good fortune gets tossed your way and a fifth spot becomes available, just embracing it rather than saying, I'd rather not get in with that. Like, just embrace it because the good fortune doesn't usually go your way. So I don't really want to hear any more of that. If there's a silver lining for a Tottenham fan that you can find with Arsenal winning, then just take it. Don't have to fight everything on it.
I could not agree with you more. Whence ever your joy comes from is whence ever a word, wherever it comes from, however it comes to you, just take it. Don't get petty about it. You've been too long in the wilderness.
Like when Tottenham finished fourth and then wound up missing out, like the rule was so bad and that happening brought it to light. They changed it the following year, but not until Tottenham still had to be the last club to suffer from it. Like, so just embrace it. If Arsenal and City going on a long run helps Tottenham or Aston Villa in some way, then I'm for it. I'm here for it. JJ, anything else on the Champions League?
Nah, not really.
All right. Well, there you go. So the quarterfinal stage, it should be a fun one. I mean, the eight teams left. It's a veritable who's who, JJ. We'll go ahead. We'll take a break. On the other side, a little bit of CONCACAF Champions Cup, a lot of U.S. men's national team, and a film review as well. More Caught Offside still to come.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, back now. Caught Offside late Wednesday evening, coming off all these dramatic Champions League matches. JJ, unrelated to all of this, you know, I'm the other day, or a couple weeks ago, I should say, I don't know if this happens to you, but like I looked in my, I needed to do laundry. And so while it was in, I looked in my drawer to get dressed and I looked in my underwear and I was like, God, damn, like I only have bad underwear left. Now I got to wear some bad underwear. I was like, oh, this is so annoying.
Cause you've gone into your reserves.
So
you've gone
down into
the under 20s and you don't, and the guys you're calling up, they're just no good.
Yeah, I have like, I could rank my underwear basically. Like, here are my good ones, here are my ones that are okay, and here's the bad ones that I hope I never have to wear, but sometimes you have to. And like, I had this kind of awakening. This is a free piece of life advice for everyone out there listening. I had an awakening in that moment where I was like, underwear's not that expensive. I'm done with this. And so I went out and I got a whole bunch that I believed would be really good, and it turns out they're awesome, and it really does change the beginning of my day when I see that I only have good pairs now. Like, if I were going to rank them, like they're all top tier now. That is such a nice way to start the day, where I don't have to immediately roll my eyes as I put on uncomfortable underwear. So a free piece of life advice for everyone out there, just, you know what, it's a small thing. It doesn't cost a lot, because I know I'm not the only one that probably has been putting on underwear, or boxers, or briefs. I wear briefs usually, boxer briefs. I rotate between the two. I bet a lot of other guys out there have a similar thing where they have some that they're just like, oh, these again. If you have some that you like, find them and buy a whole bunch, and you'll never have to worry about it again. I've changed my life over the last couple of weeks.
I have the same I have the same issue, and I have it more profoundly with socks.
Okay.
When I've got my, when I open up the sock drawer and I've got my Nike gym socks in various colors, and there's fresh ones ready to go, I'm just so happy. I'm just delighted. And when I get a hole in one of them, I'm like, God, this is the end, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's amazing how It's amazing how life drags you down to this position.
Yeah. But it's the little things, but it can just as easily, it's a little thing that can drag you back up.
Nice. Speaking of underwear and the nether regions.
Oh.
It's that month, Andrew. How's it going? How are you fixed? How's she cutting? It's St. Patrick's month. And there's no better gift for your Irish-American loved one than Manscaped. If you or your loved one wants to get the shift or is planning on getting the ride during March, you need to make sure that what's downstairs is in good order. And there is nothing better than the Manscaped family of products. Say goodbye to your hay field with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the luck of the Irish. Ah, damn, I slipped back into the old tropes. Embrace the overconfidence and accent of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code. What's our code again?
Caught offside
for 20% off and free shipping. Andrew, I love Manscaped. I love them deeply, but I will not debase myself by sliding into these tropes about the Irish. We are a introspective, thoughtful, musical people. And if you want to make the music of love, or you want to get lucky, because listen, let's be honest, there's going to be a lot of drinking going on this month, and nothing lubricates your chances better of going home with that special someone than alcohol, then make sure your downstairs is in excellent shape. And so use Manscaped. Simple as that.
That's beautiful. That was really beautiful. Get 20% off and free shipping with code CAUGHTOFFSIDE
at Manscaped.com. I had to step around all this stuff. I couldn't do the top.
But this part has to be read. This is the legal part.
Oh, go ahead.
20% off and free shipping with code CAUGHTOFFSIDE at Manscaped.com. This St. Patrick's Day, make sure. Well, this part is actually not legal. It's just their closing line. Make sure your little hairy leprechaun is luckier than ever with Manscaped.
Come on.
There you go. Let's see a couple of things here, JJ. We'll get to the U.S. men's national team Nations League squad in a sec. Before that, I just wanted to mention CONCACAF Champions Cup on Tuesday night.
Pachuca, I didn't see it, but I heard it was
it has not been a good round for MLS, let's put it that way. Tigres over Orlando City, and what Pachuca did to the Union, it was embarrassing. And I'll say this, I'll start out by saying 6-0 was the final. JJ, sentences I did not think I'd be uttering in the year 2024. I said this last night as I was watching the game. I said, I don't know how you stop Solomon Rondon. I said that last night. He owned the game, a hat trick. The year 2024.
That does not reflect well on the league. Never mind Philadelphia.
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously, look, this game was a disaster, and it was the Union aren't as bad as they played, but it does make you think a little bit. You go back to before the season started, and, you know, the Union made decisions that could impact what this team is moving forward. You know, they're in the midst of the greatest era in franchise history, undoubtedly. And have been probably one of the, I don't know, the two or three best teams in MLS over the last 5 years or so. But they really don't have anything to show for it unless you're someone, depending on how you value the supporter shield, that varies person to person. They don't really have much to show for it. Where have I seen this before? And right when it looks like they could really kick on and go for it, they have a transfer window where they do literally nothing. JJ, I already have one Tottenham in my life. I don't have room for another. This is history repeating. We've seen this movie before. And, you know, this fan base came into the season with a raised eyebrow, I think, speaking as one of them, over the lack of activity during the offseason. But, like, you know, because Bedoya is a fan favorite and because, you know, Kai Wagner, even with the ugly way his season ended, he's one of the best players in team history. So maybe you had some fans kind of who could talk themselves into it a little and be like, okay, well, we're running it back. You know, that maybe that's good cohesion, blah, 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 whatever. But a lot of fans were skeptical of that, and it looked like a real lack of ambition. This is what Kevin Kincaid of Crossing Broad, it's a great Philadelphia sports blog, this is what he wrote about the Union before the season began. He wrote, "Things are getting stale. It's hard enough that the league put these games behind the Apple TV double paywall, which iced out the casuals, but the front office and ownership aren't doing enough to improve the squad and continue the multi-season run. They aren't putting in that extra first team investment, and they aren't forcing slash marketing their way into the larger Philadelphia sports scene. It's business as usual with a mustiness wafting, which is disappointing to smell because this team still has a lot of great players and the potential to really throttle most of the opponents they'll face this year. You just ask yourself if they've done what's necessary to get over the hump, and the answer feels like a resounding no." I mean, they were kind of at a crossroads in terms of what is this team going to be? Are they going to kind of just continue to be this and not win trophies, but be good enough? Or are they really going to go for it? And they kind of chose option A there, which is to just sort of continue along with what they are. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's entirely to blame for what happened last night. Like this, like I said, this team is better than losing 6-0, even at a good Liga MX side.
Sure. I mean, yeah, Gazdag, Madlin, Wagner, Gleznes. Right.
But it's the same team. They didn't freshen anything up. They brought back all the same faces. You're asking a lot of guys who have had great seasons to continue at that level. That form can dip. Seasons go up and down. They haven't done anything to add competition to the squad. You know, yeah, some of the young players are coming through, like McGlynn. Quinn Sullivan's had a couple of good games. You know, we'll see what Chris Donovan is. But like, you know, teams around them are going out and signing big name guys from South America, from Europe. The Union, they don't do that. And it's worked for them to a certain extent. But if you're going to make the move and try to keep yourself at the top of the table, or not just at that top of the table, try to win stuff, whether it's this tournament or MLS Cup, this isn't good enough. We'll see where their season goes from here. Jim Curtin might have a difficult coaching job on his hands trying to keep the squad at the level that it's been at the last few seasons. It was ugly. It was really ugly last night. When you see Solomon Rondon just running the show like that, I mean, not good. And a bad, bad night overall for MLS. Orlando City also going out. But yeah, the Union 6-0, come on. That ain't it. Not good
enough. That is terrible. It really is.
One other, back to the UEFA Champions League for a moment. We didn't mention this earlier when we were talking about Arsenal, but JJ, I don't know if you saw Porto's manager, Sergio Conceição, accused Mikel Arteta of insulting his family.
I saw that, but I'm no closer to knowing the nature of the insult.
So like, none of us are.
Oh, you've got ugly children.
A weird thing to just suddenly say right, during a game. Here's what I know, though.
Do you think it was the old "your mother's a whore" thing?
I don't. Look, I am not calling anyone a liar. I'm not doing that. I am saying that this is not the first time that this manager specifically has had a problem with the opposing manager. ESPN FC wrote this. They wrote, this wasn't the first time Conceição had taken issue with his opposite number in the Champions League. He accused then-Chelsea boss Thomas Tuchel of insulting him when the Blues knocked Porto out at the quarterfinal stage in April 2021. Conceição also made similar claim about Man City boss Pep Guardiola following a group stage game at the Etihad in October of 2020. What's going on here?
Yeah.
This is a little bit unusual. So I don't know.
I mean, does is family a euphemism for team or something?
It doesn't say specifically that the Tuchel and Pep ones were family related. It just says that he was also upset about comments that those managers made. It wasn't specific as to the nature of the insult. So I don't know. But it's just a bit of an unusual theme.
Is he just a sensitive Sally?
I think that question is fair to be asked. Maybe he's sensitive, but I don't know. That's not fair. I didn't hear what he said. Maybe I would have been mad too. Just seems like there's a theme. That's all. Copa America begins in 100 days, JJ. But before that, it's the Nations League. And the squad was released earlier today. Remember, this is a 23-man squad, not 26. Some things that stood out. Striker, of course, which we've spoken about repeatedly. You know, the question, we've got really four guys, but three that have been mentioned most prominently of late that are flying. Well, I wouldn't say that, actually. Balogun and Pepe are not flying.
No.
But Balogun is kind of a guy that you feel like you can't take out. Pepe has done very well for the U.S. as a super sub And now Josh Sargent has emerged in this way where he's been phenomenal for Norwich City. And we talked about Haji Wright, and he's up to 13 goals and 5 assists in the championship for Coventry. So how many could you bring on a 23-man squad? Can you bring 3? Well, they did. Haji Wright was the odd man out. It is going to be Balogun, Pepe, and Sargent. It was weird, JJ. For Copa America, the Athletic, in honor of it being 100 days out, they had 6 of their soccer writers do their predictions of what the squad would be. Mm. And some of them had all 3 going. John Mueller, though, he had Jesus Ferreira going, but not Pepe or Sargent. Yeah. Imagine if Berhalter did that. I mean, that's Berhalter walking out of the tunnel with just both middle fingers in the air.
Yeah, it 100% is like, come at me, bitch. Like, that kind of vibe. Can I just say, like, I don't have a huge, like, maybe I need to mull over it overnight, but I don't have a huge issue with the team that was picked, or with the squad that was picked for these games.
I agree.
For this game, or potentially these games. I would say, though, I'm going to accept your premise that Balogun is not to be touched. Balogun has enough capital in the bank, and also the fact we've claimed Balogun. We got him. We pursued him. He has to stay in for now, at least, anyway. But and that Josh Sargent is doing so well in the championship that he must play. I'm going to accept that. Or not play, but must feature, must come along.
Yeah.
I'm going to accept that, but I'm going to challenge. I'll just use Pepe. Now, I know Pepe is at a higher level than Brandon Vasquez, has Champions League minutes, but he's not playing much at all. And he's not scoring much. He's not doing much of anything. But Brandon Vasquez is doing well at Monterrey. And obviously they played FC Cincinnati recently. And Pat Brennan of the Cincinnati Inquirer had an interesting exchange with Brandon Vasquez, and I just want to talk to you a bit about that. Now Berhalter has said, I've been in touch with Vasquez, etc. He is on my radar, but Vasquez, he's a bit lukewarm on this. Brennan says, "You're playing as well as you are right now. Could end up being very good timing with all the different USMNT opportunities coming up with Nations League and Copa America this year. How strong of a case do you think you're making to Greg Berhalter right now?" Brandon Vasquez: "I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know him that well, and he, on the personal side, has never called me up to a camp, so I don't know. I don't know where I stand with that. I have had a couple of conversations with BJ Callahan, Berhalter's assistant coach, the last couple of weeks. They are in contact with me. They are saying they're happy with how I'm doing and they're proud of me for making a jump out of my comfort zone. But I don't know where I stand with them. I guess that's all there is to it." Brennan goes on to ask, "During your transfer process, did you have a conversation with BJ or anyone else in the national team about going to Monterrey? And what did they think of it?" Vasquez: "My agent had a conversation with Greg about the move before I came here. All my agent said was that Greg liked the move and he rated it high. That's it, pretty much." So kind of the tone of that, and again, it's not easy to assess. I think if an American, and as one, if you put in, I guess, enough,
yeah,
it's very non-committal, it's very unsure, it's very maybe downbeat.
Mm-hmm. I would read it the same way.
I think there's a genuine and based on his profile and the things that he does, it's a genuine argument he deserves to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, Ricardo Pepe has 7 goals, 2 assists in all competitions this season. Not nothing. Obviously scored a pretty prominent match winner in the Champions
Considering
League.
Considering how little he starts, that is a good number.
Seven goals is not, I mean, he doesn't start games. It's just not, almost never happens. Look, he's also, but he has a track record for the U.S. of late where he's come on and been really effective in a substitution role, and they might just like that, knowing that they have that. So it's not always necessarily about taking the guys who are the best, but maybe the best for what their roles will be. Maybe they view Pepe a little bit in that light. We'll see. Tyler Adams making it, despite making his first appearance for Bournemouth earlier today. He came on in the 71st minute. He's been dealing, of course, with a couple injuries over the course of the season. I was wrong forever having been of this mind, but I was a little bit surprised that he was included. I know he's the captain. I know you can make a case he's the team's most important player, but he doesn't have minutes under his belt. He just hasn't. I don't know what his fitness level is. Copa America might be perfect timing if he's healthy. You know, he'll have like 2+ months under his belt, which could be like just ramping up to the perfect level of fitness. But right now, I mean, I don't know. I was a little bit surprised.
Well, Greg was on halftime or pregame in the Champions League with the panel, Thierry and Kate and Mika and Jamie, to discuss kind of the squad for the Nations League. And it sounded to me like it was basically a case of, we just want to get him back in, reintegrate him ahead of the summer. And okay, so we need to call him up. And from that angle, it does make sense. Let me see, when did he come on?
Adams? I think it was the 71st minute.
Was it?
I think so.
71st minute. Okay, so that's some minutes. That's promising. I mean, he just hasn't kicked ball in so long. So he goes in this Nations League camp, at least he's training, he's doing the work, he's getting fit. It makes sense to me, Andrew, because it's with a long-term view. It's not putting all your... If it was just about winning the Nations League, winning the Jamaica game specifically, I don't think he'd be there.
And look, it might just be as simple as, like, he's their leader, he's one of their best players. It might just be, is Tyler Adams healthy? Then he's on the team.
Listen, we love Luca Della Torre when he's played for this team. Well, hang on a sec. We love Luca Della Torre when he's fit, when he's playing. We love him as an option. We love how Johnny Cardoso is doing since he's moved to Europe. Brilliant. Greg loves Tyler Adams, and Tyler Adams will start every single time. That midfield, I don't think, is up for debate.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think if Moose is ready to go, if Adams is ready to go, unless he's playing horses for courses where he wants to change and maybe pack the midfield out and play five in there or something strange, it's McKennie, it's Adams, it's Musa. It's that simple.
By the way, as a side note, boy, Tyler Adams really walked right back into a very normal game, huh? Bournemouth went down 3-0, 3-0 in the first half, come back and win 4-3. It's the biggest comeback in the Premier League since 2003-04.
So Luton will be relegated now.
This is incredible. Luton are putting together a horrifying catalogue of defeats this season.
What Luton need now is adjudication on Nottingham Forest and adjudication on Everton.
Yeah.
To know where they're at.
We're heading towards that. I mean, this team, they score goals. I mean, when Ross Barkley scores right before the half to put them up 3-0, it's like, okay, well, this is a big, they're good, but they just never are. I mean, defensively, they're just too brittle. And I mean, they have lost. They will not forget this. If they're relegated, they will not forget this relegation because they have.
I feel sick for them.
They've earned it with some really, really brutal defeats.
Yeah, I feel sick for them, but not their fans.
You've made a point of that before. Though,
yeah, definitely.
Let's see, Gio Reyna in the squad, JJ. I know we've talked about him and Nottingham Forest not playing much. I saw Brian Scaretta talking about Berhalter's appearance. He said Berhalter just spoke of Gio Reyna's lack of minutes. He said it's always a concern when players don't play regularly, but he said there's always an adjustment period moving leagues. He said he thinks Gio will get there, called him up because he's performed well for the USMNT. Another one of these guys that I guess he just trusts, regardless of what the playing time is.
Also a guy he's got a tiptoe around, don't forget. So
yeah, maybe that, I don't know. Maybe there's still a little bit of that in the decision making. Defensively, there were a couple spots I was intrigued by. Mark McKenzie's had a really good season in the Belgian league for Genk. Austin Trusty has made 19 Premier League starts this year for Sheffield United. Was wondering, you know, how that would shake out.
Yeah. There was a few complaints about Miles Robinson being in there, I saw.
Well, because he's an MLS player. And what do we know about American fans, JJ? That most of, a good number of them, if they see an MLS name on a U.S. men's national team squad, they're just going to not like it. That's just, I don't even know what more analysis there is to give than that. Mm. But Austin Trusty did not make this squad. And McKenzie did. I guess, you know, more interesting maybe than the names on it, some of the ones that were not. I thought the big loser today when the squad was announced was definitely Brendan Aaronson, as this is probably the clearest sign yet that his career has taken a step back. And it's not just the fans that have noticed that. Obviously, the national team manager has as well. Greg mentioned him, Haji Wright, and Brandon Vasquez. He mentioned those three names specifically in terms of guys who didn't make the squad that made this a difficult decision. But for Brendan Aaronson, I would think for a guy who it felt like was starting to push his way almost into consideration for starting 11, this is a bad diversion that his career has taken, and he's going to have to find a way to get it back on track, whether that's the club that he decides to go to next or I don't know, his work during the offseason. I don't know. But this was a bad day for him. No way around. Yeah,
I mean, he just doesn't start enough. Starting 11 six times, off the bench 15 times. And I mean, Union have talked about being open about trying to improve him as a player. It's not good. It's not good at all, because he was a mainstay for so long under Greg.
Yeah, and by the way, Drake Callender was the third keeper. I know that that's been some conversation on this show about that.
Well, I got it right, didn't I?
Because Horvath was also there. But you're going to be wrong, because Turner's going to start. You said Turner shouldn't be number one anymore.
Correct.
Well, but you didn't get that right. Well, I guess we won't know until the game happens, but Horvath's probably not going to be starting. We'll see. Who knows? All right, that's it for the pod, JJ. So if anybody wants to duck out now, they're free to.
Oh, okay. Why do you do that? You have no faith in what people...
Because if people haven't seen this movie, then what, they're going to sit here and listen to my critique of it?
They're not going to be, oh my God, he talked about X or Y in the Irish Civil War. Now I simply can't watch this movie. It's too familiar to me. I'll know exactly what's going to happen. No. You can
talk. All right, well, then everyone stay.
The movie's out since 2006. Come on, talk.
But I'm saying this is the moment now for everyone who hasn't seen it to leave. Go find it. Either pay for it on YouTube or get Plex.
Or Amazon Prime.
Sure, wherever you will. Yeah, you can find it. Plex is where it was free. And then you come back to this later, and then this will all make more sense. So here, I don't want to get you... your hopes up. I don't have too much. So the movie, right. It's called The Wind That Shakes the Barley. I don't know if we've said that. I don't know. But yes. Just I have some comments and some questions about all of it. Okay. One thing, just like I don't know what the purpose of this was. And I wonder if you could dig to find a reason for this. 2006 wasn't that long ago. It was interesting that stylistically they chose to not, like a lot of people get shot and killed in this movie, but they don't show... Like usually in any movie I've seen that involves war, when guys get shot, there's blood. Like there's a clear sign that someone has been shot. They don't show anyone. That doesn't happen in this. A guy will just suddenly slump over. I don't know why that is. Was that a choice that was made?
I don't recall there being no blood coming out of people
when guys got, like at the end, again, this ridiculous spoiler alert, but when Cillian Murphy's character is executed at the end of the movie, his body just slumps. Like you don't see bullets happening. I was just wondering if there was a reason for that.
I suppose the weaponry at the time was different as well. It's not like he was being riddled with an AK-47.
You would see blood and bullets. Anyway, whatever.
All right. Okay.
So here's a question that I have for you. Because again, I don't know much about how this all transpired with Ireland getting its independence. So Michael Collins.
Yes.
Help me out here. Is he considered an Irish hero or an Irish traitor?
Oh, God. A hero.
Okay.
Generally,
he was
hero.
Not painted that way by a lot of the main characters near the end of this movie.
No, because a lot of the main characters in the end of the movie considered what he did. I mean, the IRA had split. The Free State Army, he was now head of the Free State. They saw that as a compromise too far. They saw it as British rule in it, just in a different guise. They felt the job hadn't been finished. And so, I mean, he was shot. He was shot in County Cork by a fellow Irishman, by the IRA, by the what they were called the irregulars. So when the IRA split, they split into two camps, those who accepted the treaty and those who joined the National Army, and then those who decided that they would fight on, and they were called the irregulars. And so the so he was shot by one of his own.
But he is held up as a hero. Like when you learn about him in school, it's like the way we learn about like George Washington. And
generally speaking, yes. Now, at the time, there would have been a split between De Valera and Collins. Eamon De Valera would have been considered the Republican. He was the one that kept on fighting, did not join politics until much later, didn't accept the treaty until much later. And then Collins was seen as someone who accepted the treaty. But as I was growing up, he was seen as the man who brought the English to the negotiating table with his tactics of war for the IRA.
Interesting. See, this is all stuff I did not know. I didn't know that there was basically...
It's pretty nuanced.
That this stuff kind of splintered into civil war among
Irish.
Yes,
it did. It did. I was actually...
Maybe I should have known that, but I found that whole part of the movie fascinating.
And then the two participants in the civil war, they became the two major political parties in the country, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Hmm. Those who accepted the treaty they started off as Cumann na Gael, and then they morphed into Fine Gael later on, and De Valera started Fianna Fáil, which was, and now, by the way, both parties have almost everything in common with each other, mm-hmm. Centre-right parties. The difference for them was which side of the civil war you were on. So we've had civil war politics as far as I've known it. The two major parties have been the dividing parties in the civil war.
But all their policies today are essentially the same.
Almost the same.
They agree on their debates must be hilarious.
Almost the same. They agree on
everything until they get to, okay, now let's go back and relive the 1920 civil war.
No, honestly, two center-right parties. And I think that has helped us as a country. We've never lurched far to the left or thankfully far to the far right. Because we've had these two stabilizing forces. Now, has it caused like inertia in the country and a lack of forward progress? Yes. Yes. Because you're just getting two parties with far too similar political, economic, social policies. Uh-huh. But it has kept the kind of train on the tracks a little bit.
Okay. So my next question was, so the movie ends. It ends kind of abruptly. What happened after this? When did the movie basically ends with Ireland in a state of civil war and chaos.
Yeah.
So like at what point, who won out? And at what point did Ireland truly, because the movie basically ends with the message being there's an illusion of independence, but they're not actually independent. How long did that go on for until Ireland truly became the country that it is today, which is free and independent of any kind of semblance of British rule?
Well, so the civil war, after the treaty was accepted and voted in, the Civil War lasted, I mean, it barely lasted a year, 1922 to May 1923.
And the Free Staters won out.
And the Free Staters won out. They did
so
win
the
out.
Treaty was defended.
The treaty was ratified. The country was partitioned as well. Part of that was the partition of Ireland, which was the division of the six counties of Ulster would become its own statelet of Northern Ireland, which would be part of the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland, Wales, England, Scotland, right? Mm-hmm. And the Free State would then be... So the Irish Free State existed up until, I think, 40... I'd have to check now, but the Irish Free State then changed. It was declared a republic. So there was a complete and total break with England, but it was a free state. It was independent of Britain, but it remained within the British Commonwealth.
Hmm.
So it was self-ruling, self-governing, and it was declared a republic in 1948.
Okay, interesting.
With the UK government passing the Government of Ireland, the Ireland Act 1949, which acknowledged Ireland had ceased to be a part of His Majesty's dominions, but it was de facto free. It was the same freedom as Canada or Australia.
Okay,
up until we were declared a republic.
Interesting. Now, this is all very interesting to me. Yeah. Those were some of my questions. I mean, in terms of the movie, I should tell you, I loved it. Because you know I love history, movies that have to do that are whether it's historical fiction, whatever. I just love these kinds of movies. And this one I thought was great. The acting was great. Cillian Murphy was awesome. The story of all of this was just very interesting to me. I felt like I actually learned a lot. And I will say this also. The British, they really do have a resume of movies that they can put together where they are very ugly villains.
It's amazing how, like, colonialism will do that.
This movie, The Patriot,
yeah,
with Mel Gibson. Even JJ, United Passions. That was my big takeaway from United Passions, where the British were almost cartoonish in the way they were portrayed. But so, like in this movie, I'm not sure if a British character speaks a single line. They only scream them with venom.
Yeah,
the landlord
that the British upper class gentleman that they kidnap and shoot up the mountain.
Yeah,
he is a very clear, he's many lines and he's got a very clear,
that's true,
speaking voice. He just doesn't scream. But the point about only seeing screaming Scottish and English people in the film is that is to, so basically those are the auxiliaries, or they're known as the black and tans, because of the color of their uniform. They were sent after the IRA started its operations 1917-1918, they were sent. So the IRA was attacking the police force, the RIC, Royal Irish Constabulary, in Ireland, and attacking military installations in Ireland. They were sent to quell the IRA in the most brutal fashion possible.
Yeah.
So I grew up, even so many decades and decades later, I grew up with stories of atrocities carried out by the Auxies, the Black and Tans. They weren't meant to go in there and be anything other than screaming British maniacs.
Well, the movie captured that.
Yeah, genocidal lunatics these guys were. And some of them had seen action in World War One and were definitely shell-shocked and had many issues. But they were bad characters, Andrew. And where I grew up in South Sligo, there was a part of it. I mean, it was the Helmand province of Ireland in that era. The amount of attacks on the auxiliaries, the amount of retaliation then. So there was an attack by the IRA on an auxiliary barracks not far from our house, and for reprisals the IRA went into Tubbercurry and burned it to, or they, excuse me, the yeah. Black and Tans went into the town and burned it to the ground.
Jeez. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's really all I have. I thought the movie was really, really good. I'm glad you recommended it to me, and I'm glad that I pounced on it. And anybody else out there who's like us and enjoys these kind of historical movies and who likes the work of Cillian Murphy.
Yeah, he's very good in this and deeply intense.
It's worth watching. It's worth watching.
Look, it's good. It's so tough to get back to that period and recapture that era, even though it's not really that long ago. It's 100 years ago, but it's very, very good. And it kind of gives you a picture of the country. And I wouldn't say it's a very flattering portrayal of the English, but
it's not the most uplifting movie.
But that was not an uplifting period. And I will go on to say one thing. The atrocities that happened in the Civil War are just as bad as what the British did to the IRA and to ordinary civilians during the War of Independence. There was incidents at Knocknagoshal and Ballyseedy that were like war crimes.
Uh-huh.
Horrendous. And my father told me growing up about how so many people of that era, so my father was born in 1939, so my father would say how him growing up in the 40s and 50s, that the people that came through that era that were that remembered it, many of them wouldn't speak of it. It was neighbor against neighbor, brother against brother.
I mean, that's this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was and it was horrendous. And the scars of the Civil War never, I'd say they've gone away now, but they took decades and decades to go.
There you go. So this was really more history lesson than it was movie review, but I just find it interesting. And I'm glad that you have such a grasp on this, so you can educate.
Well, there's even stuff. I forgot when Ireland was declared a republic. I had to look that up just there. So wow. I'm not perfect, Andrew. Class dismissed.
That's true. Hey, I enjoyed this immensely. We will be back, of course, with another edition of Caught Offside early next week. This is there's a smattering of Premier League games, but this is primarily an FA Cup weekend, is it not? You got Liverpool, Manchester United this weekend.
We've got Liverpool, Manchester United. Speaking of the flags of the Civil Wars. That's not a good link at all. Yeah, no, we've got United on St. Patrick's Day. Oh,
that should be a fun one. Someone is going to leave that game in a state of low morale.
Is as if you need to make St. Patrick's Day more of a drinking day.
So that should be a lot of fun. And yeah, we'll be back full analysis early next week. JJ, I enjoyed this immensely. Thank you for the history lesson. It actually does truly help with my feelings and enjoyment of the movie. To you,
thank you for caring about Ireland.
Yeah, I do. I genuinely do. I've been there. I love that place. I would go back in a heartbeat. It was an amazing place. I loved it, truly. JJ, this was a lot of fun. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.